You're actually in Hill about a credit card worth of plastics, and a large part of it were nanoparticles from tires and brake dust. 2 billion tires a year going to scrap. These wheels ending up in landfills or in the oceans. We're replacing the rubber tire with a mechanical wheel structure to complement the vehicles and the vehicle dynamics and the suspension system. Only on the outside, you have a part that wears off, and that's the only part that you actually replace.
Hello and welcome to our Be Curious podcast. I'm your host, Louise Houghton, and in every episode, we get curious about a different subject, from the food we eat to the clothes we wear to overflowing landfills and ocean plastic. All of our guests have brilliant minds and innovative ideas to ensure that we can live a more sustainable, conscious, and pollutant-free life. And the best part is, this podcast is not just about listening. It's about building a community and bringing together like-minded individuals who are curious about alternatives to enhance their lives and the longevity of our planet. And if you're curious already and want to win some of the products or services gifted to you from our guests on the podcast, then why not head over to our Instagram for more information. You can find out how to enter at becurious_podcast. Today we're getting curious about tires, something that we think very little about until there's a blowout or we go to the garage and they tell us we need new ones and it'll cost us $1,000. Well, in keeping with the title of this podcast, it's time that we get curious about these rubber wheels and discover the impact that they have on our environment. Today we're dialing in to talk to the CMO of Global Air Cylinder Wheels, Harman van Kamp, who is going to share a little bit more about this eco-friendly alternative to the common rubber tire. Thank you so much for joining us, Harman.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Louise.
Of course. Now, to me, this episode really shows that there's so many aspects of our everyday life that we just don't think about and how it has such a huge impact on our environment. So I found it so fascinating to research really what you're doing and everything. And I can't wait to share that this story with our audience. Do you want to start by sharing what Global Air Cylinder Wheels actually does?
Oh, absolutely. So I work together with structural mechanical and dynamic engineers. The invention was made all the way back in 2011, literally drinking beer on a napkin by my co-founder, Zoltan Kemeny. Didn't think much about it because, you know, these juggernaut companies, they invent everything, don't they? And then we received our first patent back in 2015 and didn't really start getting serious about it in 2016. So what it really does, we're replacing the rubber tire, which is highly pollutive, with a mechanical wheel structure to complement the vehicles and the vehicle dynamics and the suspension system.
So how does this technology make it so much more environmentally friendly then?
Well, think about it. When you replace your tire that you just spoke about, you know, your garage tells you to change the tire, but you only use about 5-7% of the actual product, which is that outer small layer of profile, and 90-95% of the wheel of the rubber tire actually gets thrown away. Now, what we've done, we replace that with a steel structure, and only on the outside you have a part that wears off, and that's the only part that you actually replace, making it far better for the environment because you don't have all this waste, and also more economical.
It's kind of hard to visualize in some ways how the technology or the actual suspension works. So if people are watching this video, then I'll actually try and include some of that footage in there. But for people who are just listening, how can you explain that kind of mechanism?
Yeah, this stuff. One picture always speaks 1,000 words, but you need to imagine taking off your entire wheel, so the rim and the rubber tire, and replacing it with our own rim and an outer steel drum. Now, between those two, there's a little gap, which allows for cylinders to be placed between those two. So air cylinders, literally hydraulic cylinders filled up with nitrogen gas. And those will give you the suspension and the deflection as what you would get from a normal, ordinary rubber tire. So everything now happens on the inside of the wheel, which means, you know, you're not going to get blowouts or dangerous situations for tires wearing off quicker because everything is protected on the inside. The only thing we have on the outside then is either a polyurethane material or a rubber, but many different materials we can use now that are better for the environment. And that's the only part that you wear off. And again, that's the only part you're going to be replaced. And the wheel structure actually stays with the vehicle and becomes part of the vehicle even. So it's really a big change in to imagine and how this will work with the vehicle itself.
Yes, it is. And we'll talk about like the wearing away of that actual rubber a bit later on, because there's definitely some environmental impact of all of those tiny little bits of rubber that end up on our road surface. But if people do want to have a look at that, they can, of course, go to your website or your Instagram as well. I know you've got lots of images of the tires and things on there. But on a personal level, Harman, when we think about like being more environmentally friendly, you know, we might think about using less plastic or eating local or things like that. Taking on the entire tire industry is a whole different sort of kettle of fish. It's a big undertaking for you guys. So let's talk a little bit more about the actual tire and the history of it and the evolution of how it came to be today. I think it was first invented back in 1888 by a Scotsman for a bicycle, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. It has a long history. But just because it has a long history doesn't mean it's a great idea. Back in the days, it was probably a good idea. You need to imagine in those days, you know, spokes were steel spokes on tractors. It was a rough ride. Obviously, you had these horse and carriages that had a little bit of suspension between the wheel and the carriage itself. So they started adding first leather straps and then rubber latex kind of straps. Mind you, the first rubber tires were actually white because they were made out of pure latex, pure rubber. And that had its development. Now, they really struggled getting traction in the beginning because the negatives and the positives, they were almost equal, because now you got tire blowouts, you got tires overheating, you got tire fires. You lose actually a little bit of traction in comparison to steel spikes they had. But it won popularity because it gave a little bit of a softer ride. But that's right. It's been a long, long, long way coming that it's, you know, in the development, but the development of that rubber tire, not much has really changed over the last 140 years almost. It's still the same concept. They changed from bias ply to radial ply, what they call on the inside of the wheel. But other than that, the tire is pretty much the same of that original concept.
And what is it actually made of then? Because I think it's only a small fraction of it, like 19% or something, that's actually made from rubber, from like the rubber trees.
Yeah, that's correct. Depending on the tire use and the application, but it's indeed about 19-20% is actual latex. And the rest is a lot of steel wiring, rubber, synthetic rubbers, but a lot of oil is in there. A lot of people think it's just a balloon concept, but it has more than 23 to 50 different chemical components in that all need to go well together. And there's one chemical in particular called carbon black, the reason why the tire is black, that holds that all together, which is extremely harmful for the environment, that's in that tire. So the tire is far more complex than the eye may meet and can see. But yeah, it's a lot more chemicals in there than just that original little bit of rubber and latex that was in there.
But even with all of those synthetic materials, it will still wear down when it kind of is on the road a lot, isn't it?
Well, it's difficult to put all these restrictions in one thing, because it needs to be, and you know, you want to have speed rating. So you want to be able to go fast in it, or you want to have a high payload. It needs to be laterally stiff. It needs to be able to last long. It needs to be able to stretch. Now, to put that all in one tire, that's really, really difficult. So it's higher science. And if you'd see the budgets of R&D these companies spend on getting that work, it's honestly incredible. Doesn't make it a very good product environmentally or safe even. But yeah, it's a very, very, very complex product, really, the rubber tire.
And what happens to all those tiny particles that do wear off when we use them?
Not sure if you want to know, but they wear off on nano microscopic level. There was a study done the other day that if you live in the city of London, you actually inhale and it gets into your body about a credit card worth of plastics. And a large part of it were nanoparticles from tires and brake dust.
You inhale a credit card over how long?
In about 2 weeks. In every 2 weeks, you inhale a credit card worth of plastics. And it's quite shocking. So a lot of it comes from these nanoparticles because it wears down extremely fine. So the focus has always been on exhausts of these internal combustion engines. But the tire dust and also the brake dust from the brake discs are far more polluting at this stage and far more damaging for the environment and our bodies than you might think. Now, that's only the wear and tear of what happens there in on the road, then you obviously have these wheels ending up in landfills or in the oceans. They break down in oceans for as much as they can break down, and fish will eat particles. It still ends up in the ecosystem. We eat the fish again, and it ends up in our bodies in the end again. It's quite shocking to have found small particles at the greatest depths of the oceans, and they came from tires.
It's amazing. I never thought about all of these different microplastics actually coming off a tire. For some reason, when I hear about microplastics, I think of plastic bottles, single-use plastic, and all those kind of things. So you're really opening my mind up right now.
Well, it's interesting. When I started this journey, I didn't know anything about it. And I started Googling information about tires. And then there's an article in 2019, even in the National Geographic, quite extensively talking about tires. And they're calling it tires, the polluter that you never thought about. And when I show that to people, everyone always says, I've never thought about that. What happens to my tire? And if you go through that, you know, renewal process and you drop off your old tires, ask them, what do they do with the tires? I guarantee you, they always will say, well, it's recycling. You can only recycle it up to a certain point. And whatever doesn't get recycled gets shipped off to Asian countries, and they literally just dump them in the sea and in the ocean. It's a shocking story. And considering that we have 2 billion tires a year going to scrap, it's a staggering amount.
Well, I also think that sometimes the garages tell you to replace them when it's not even necessary. I had that happen to me recently. They were, you know, only halfway down, but they said, oh, it's time to replace them because you've had them for 5 years. And I said, well, but are they actually in need of replacing, you know, or is that just the time frame in which you're telling me that they need to be done?
Well, it's interesting. So there's two things to tires. One is the wear and tear on it, but it actually has an expiry date on it as well. All those chemicals, particularly when they're exposed to the environment or in the sun, they will actually start degrading. So if you leave a tire out without ever using it for over a year, you're already at 80%, down to 80% of its useful life. And if you let it out indeed for 5, 6 years, you're down to zero, even if you haven't used your tire.
And then that's another $1,000 or so to just replace them.
Money, money, money.
Yeah, indeed. So what does happen to these tires? I mean, you mentioned some of them go into the ocean. I see them just sitting on the side of the freeway for ages from people who've had a blowout. But do they get burnt as well? Is that another way that people try to get rid of them?
Yes and no. So officially, you shouldn't burn them because it releases an awful lot of very, very nasty chemicals. As mentioned before, you know, the tire is not just rubber, is what we think. We call it a rubber tire, but it has a lot more to it. What has happened in the past a lot and still happening, poorer third world countries actually receive money for taking on large quantities of tires from Western countries. And they put them in big landfills, which is very bad for the environment, all the chemicals that leach into the ground. But sometimes, and this is a notable fire that happened actually in Kuwait, I believe it's 2015, one of the largest tire fires in the world. It got ignited and it burned for weeks on end because the heat and the fuel, remember, oil is a big component of making tires. They just simply couldn't put out that fire. And then they burned them, and the chemicals, the chemical cloud that came off it, you know, literally had caused whole villages to have to move because of the fallout of cancerous materials and chemicals. It's really, really bad in that sense.
What kind of toxic chemicals are in those kind of fires then?
Now, I'm not a chemist, but at least there's benzene, styrene, xylene in there. You've got phenols in there, and they're all either linked to cancer or are going to be proven that they're linked to other nasty diseases. But there's also heavy metals in there that you may have not think about, thought about. Zinc, chromium, nickel, lead, copper, cadmium. Some of them are materials that you don't necessarily want in your body either.
And we're affected by those when we're breathing them in, or are they going into the ocean, into the fish that we're then eating?
Both ways. The biggest problem is the tires wear off so slowly in that sense. It wears off on a nanoscale. So it's so fine that when it enters your lungs, it actually does get absorbed by your bloodstream. So you actually don't want those particles to be fine. But if you don't want to wear it off in such a fine scale, you want to have larger particles, which again means that the duration of your tire or your durability of your tire goes down. So it's always a huge trade-off that you'll be looking at. But no, these are chemicals that you do not want in your lungs, and definitely not in your bloodstream, and certainly not in your food.
No, definitely not. So let's talk about global air cylinder wheels and the solution that you have to combat some of these environmental challenges that we're faced with the common tire. How are your developments going?
Good. You can imagine we have many verticals that we can go into. We're speaking about car tires and mining that we're attacking at this moment. It can be replacing any wheel type and any vehicle type. So wheelchairs, bicycles, cars, trucks, buses, construction vehicles, mining, etc., etc. That would be too much for us to take on. Like you said, we're up against some juggernauts in the industry. So we're focusing on mining at the first in the first stage. Now, a lot of people first say then say, well, why mining? Mining is dirty. We don't want mining.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very eco-friendly. It's kind of ironic.
It is the irony. Well, I always have to remind people that remember, everything you see around you is either grown or mined. We cannot go without mining, and we cannot go without farming and growing things. Otherwise, we would just stop society. So what we can do, however, is make mining more environmentally friendly. And of course, this is cost-driven. But these mining companies at this moment, they're either getting tax incentives or they get taxed if they don't start getting their act together and become more environmentally friendly. So there's a huge shift in the last decade or 15 years ago to really becoming environmentally responsible and have environmentally friendly mining going on. So tires is a huge part of that. Keep in mind that mining vehicles, they operate 23 hours a day, in contrast to your car that usually stands still for 23 hours a day. And so the usage there is enormous. It's an enormous market. And over there, as well in other applications, of course, but the safety factor is a huge thing. A tire blowout on that size is not something you want to be close to.
How big are the mining tires? I know they're very big.
Oh, they're enormous. The smallest size you'll be looking at is in inches, about 114 inch, and the largest one you'll be looking at nearly 16 feet in overall diameter. It's enormous, or in metric, almost 3.5 meters.
Okay, thanks for doing the math there. And so if that blows out, as you say, there must be a huge impact.
Oh yeah, and it's not necessarily the actual pressure; it's just the sheer volume of air. And unfortunately enough, yes, yeah, so this happens all too regular still. You can't avoid it because you can't get rid of the tires. Well, with our solution, that's the whole aim of the game, of course. And I'll give you a quick incident. The other day, there was a tire blowout in a mine pit, and it was 500 meters away from the administrative offices they had. And even though it was 500, so half a kilometer away from those offices, it blew out every single window of those offices. So just imagine the pressure and the volume of air that just blows up and left a crater in the ground. And the operator luckily survived it. But yeah, it's one of the major issues and problems to be solved on mine sites.
Does that happen very often?
Too often still. You just never know. There's so many things to a tire, how it's positioned and how they put it on and the overheating and the wear and tear. And let's say a small rock get lodged in. I mean, you're in the end of the day in an open pit mining, happens all the time. You can't see that rock, but it works its way through, cutting through all those wires inside the tire, and it could blow up at any time, or deflate, or it's so many things that can happen to a tire. It happens way too regular still.
And I suppose the tires in a mine are actually going over uneven terrain all the time. They're not on tarmac like we are on the roads.
Oh, it's incredible what these tires have to sustain when it comes down to the payload. A mining truck alone, a small one, is 100 tons, and it carries around another 100 tons. The big ones, what they call the ultra class trucks, you're able to get 450 up to 450 tons of ore that's in that load bed. Imagine the payload capacity these tires require in the whole vehicle. It's phenomenal.
And so with your tires then, of course they're not going to blow out in the same way because of the technology and the mechanisms inside the tire and that sort of taking the pressure. But what about, the actual rubber wearing away? It must still have that same kind of challenge.
Yeah, so what we did is because of the structure, and indeed I do encourage you to look it up because it's hard to imagine how it looks on the inside. We bring out all the hard work to the inside of the wheel where it makes the most sense. So all the suspension and deflection and the payload carrying capacity works through those air cylinders. And those you can scale very easily. There's almost no limit on how big you can make these. So once that is protected on the inside, when you hit a bump, the outside where the impact happens, it doesn't get into contact with a, with the balloon anymore. It really hits a rubber pad that's made to be able to withstand those, or with a polyurethane pad, or with a steel tread even. We can use many different materials now that are far better resistant to those impacts and those road conditions, because we don't have those limitations anymore. Because again, everything is brought to the inside of the wheel.
To me, I visualize it, if we're trying to sort of talk about how it's actually come together, I see it as like a little pump. You know how you have those little bicycle pumps that you might stand up and down? So it takes the pressure in that same way on the inside of the wheel, but just in a circular motion.
That's a very good comparison, actually. And the good thing with that is, and this is a little bit technical perhaps, a tire has a linear suspension system to it, or suspension to it, which means at a tire, when there's not a lot of load on it, it's actually quite rough. It's a rough ride. Only when you add pressure to it, you get a little bit of what you call damping. Now, what we do by using the cylinders, I always compare it to either a bicycle pump or what you have on doors, those restrictors on top of doors that it's easy
Ah,
to
yes.
open at the beginning and it gets progressively harder at the end. Well, that's what we do. So it's really a much smoother ride even. So not only is it safer and cost effective and better for the environment, it's a much smoother ride as well.
And that would make sense when you come to looking at other vehicles that you want to put them into as well. Like having a smoother ride would be a big selling point.
Yes. Now, mining is only the start. I have a personal passion as well to get these on wheelchairs. For vets, for disabled people, that's going to be a huge thing. We're looking for partners actually in getting that done. We can't do it all or ourselves. But yeah, we actually made a prototype for a wheelchair and compared how the physics work and the energy saving works on a normal wheelchair compared to a wheelchair without technology on it. And it's not a small difference. It's a complete change in how it works and how the feel is and how the energy is required to get through gravel, for example, or even onto wet grass. That's really something that personally I'm passionate about, and it's definitely in the cards.
Oh, that's definitely something that I'm passionate about as well. My mother's actually in a wheelchair, and she always talks about like the impact that the terrain that we're going over has on her experience of like sitting in the chair. And so, if you can make that smoother going over different terrain and not have the same sort of pressure, I can understand for any wheelchair user how that would be such a shift for their experience.
I can't say too much about it at this stage, but I'm working in the background really hard to getting something done there. And stay tuned, I should
Stay
say.
tuned. Okay, I will do. And what about other partnerships then? Are you working to try and establish partnerships in the automotive industry as well?
That's a very good point. The automotive industry is in sheer numbers of tires that need to be replaced, obviously far greater and bigger than mining, far more complex, far more competitors. Regulations come into play. Now, that's something we can do ourselves. So the way the patents and the technology is structured is we can license this to a company that can take this on board, see the benefits of this, and really adapt this and adjust this to this vehicle's requirements. As you can imagine, in mining, you need high payload capacity but relatively low speed. For a car, it's exactly the opposite, relatively low payload, but you require high speed. Possibility. So that's something that really needs to be adjusted by an original equipment manufacturer, a chassis manufacturer, a car manufacturer, or even a rim manufacturer that sees benefit in developing this. But we wouldn't do that ourselves. Again, the regulations is quite a big hurdle for us, but partners.
Do you think there would be a lot of competition from tire manufacturers out there already for them to want to actually do this technology? Or do you think they'd be open to those kind of partnerships?
So that's an interesting question because within the tire and rim industry, the airless tire has become the holy grail and almost the impossible puzzle to solve. There's so many concepts out there, and they've tried and they're trying, but it always has a drawback. Either they use more rubber, or it's an open structure that starts whistling at high speeds, or because of the open structure, it fills up with debris and it destroys it. They just couldn't get it right. We've even presented this to a very big tire company, and they came back to us and they said, "Look, this will work. Everything you say, your claim will work. But we wish you a lot of luck being unlucky, because if this comes out, it destroys our business selling rubber. We want to sell more rubber.
Yeah.
And we're not about selling rubber. We're selling, a real solution to a couple of very, very, very big problems." So the competition is not because they're competition. The competition is competition because they just don't want us to happen. And I always like to compare it a little bit to Blockbuster Netflix. As much as Blockbuster didn't want Netflix to happen, it still did. And we're coming to that point as well. It's going to happen.
Right, you can even get on board with the change and help make it happen, or you can resist it and it's going to happen anyway.
And then you lose out.
Then you lose out. But as you say, the tire manufacturing is so huge. I mean, the automotive industry is so huge. Any industrial kind of manufacturing like that has got so many investors and so much money sort of at a government level as well. So changing all of those kind of legislations to allow this kind of to come in, I imagine, could be quite hard.
Oh, I don't expect this to happen in the next year or so. That's probably going to take a good decade. But keep in mind, it's a big market. Tires evolve, or vehicles evolve all the time. Look at the change that Tesla made to the car industry. That didn't go over one night ice either. That took a long time. So we're ready for it. And again, we're focusing on particularly mining and wheelchairs and in a parallel at the moment. And if a partner, once we've proven it in the mine site, I can tell you if we got these wheels running for a couple of months now, we're still in that R&D phase, then other industries will take notice.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm surprised Tesla hasn't actually tried to find an alternative and be the first to do this.
I wouldn't be surprised if people within Tesla have seen this and are sitting on the sideline looking at it and waiting for some results to come in.
Okay. We've already had some amazing accolades. I know one huge one from Time magazine. Do you want to tell us about that?
Oh, yeah, not to forget. Yes, we were recognized last year by Time Magazine for Best Inventions. We were invited to that for a couple of years, and we just didn't feel ready for it because you really want to have a couple of milestones in patents and proof of technology. So last year they asked us again, and we showed them what we did and what we have accomplished. And yeah, I think that's indeed one of the biggest accolades that we've earned now. What I always say, remember in 2006, I believe that the iPhone was also one of the new inventions in Time Magazine, and see where that is now. So yeah, who knows where this is going to take us, but yeah, it's a big recognition of our work so far.
Definitely a wonderful accolade.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
on that. How important is it for you to see these tires worldwide?
On a personal level, very, very, very big. I, just like most people, really didn't know much about tires. It's just one of those things that are just given. You need tires, and we can't get around it. So the more I got invested into this, literally, and knowledgeable about it, and you see the environmental impact on this in particular, you really start getting passionate about, okay, wow, this is something I never thought about, how big of a problem this is. So from a safety perspective and environmental perspective, it's huge. I think it's going to be one of the biggest inventions in the next, decade or so that's going to come out. Definitely mining. I've got several big mining companies, notable mining companies, saying, "Look, Harvard, if your wheel works half as good or even a quarter as good as that you're promising or that you're saying that it could work, based on fit on engineering calculations, you're going to change the industry forever." So that's only mining. I think it's going to be, oh, I can see where we are now, that this is really going to take off very soon.
And what could it do for our environment?
It's going to solve one of the biggest pollutants in the world. Everyone always thinks about fast fashion, about straws. Oh, th thank God the European Union prohibited plastic straws. they're overlooking the big elephant in the room again, which is tires. And I always encourage people, you know, don't take my word for it. Do a little bit of research, you know, tires harmful for the environment, Google that or any variation of that, and you'll be shocked. And 2 billion tires, nearly 2 billion tires every year being thrown away is staggering. And that really needs to stop. And again, we're not just throwing away rubber or natural materials. We're literally throwing away a lot of dirty chemicals that are getting into the oceans.
And that's not to mention, of course, how it impacts our health, not just, you know, all of the pollution of the actual tires themselves.
Absolutely. And again, you know, it ends up in soils, in rivers, in oceans, in the air. And you can't see it. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
I think you're so right to say, though, that this is the big elephant in the room, because as I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, you really do just think about the smaller things that media has sort of shown us to be like environmentally bad, like the straws, for example. But that's just because of one story that we saw of one tortoise who had a straw. And it's great. You know, I'm really passionate about that. And I think that there's such an unnecessary single-use bit of plastic. But when we have this huge impact from rubber tires and things that you're telling us today, it's just mind-blowing to think, oh my goodness, I never even thought about that. There's so many things in our daily lives that we never think about the impact of. And so that's what, you know, this podcast is all about, to get curious about those little things that you just wouldn't think about otherwise. So thank you so much for sharing this story with us today. Where can people find out more about what you're doing and follow what you're doing?
At the moment, it's the website is more rigged to mining, but things will be added onto it. But go to our website. It's simply www.globalaircylinderwheels.com or Google GACW, and we'll pop up absolutely everywhere. So yeah, either there or indeed our Instagram. Our handle is @airsuspensionwheels or airless wheels. But again, just Global Air Cylinder Wheels and you'll find us there.
And we'll put all of those links in the show notes as well for everybody who's listening. So thank you so much for sharing everything that you're doing. And thank you for doing what you're doing to help our environment and ourselves as well. Huge thank you, Harman, for joining us today. If you are interested and you want to share or like or follow our podcast and everything that we have going on the other episodes, then please do so. Subscribe as well and head over to our Instagram if you want to find out more about the giveaways that we have going on. You can do that at becurious_podcast. I'm Louise Houghton. A huge thank you to Harman, our guest today. And until next time, everyone, stay curious.